You are listening to killradio.org, and this is Teacher Talk. Here we go. Take it away, teachers.
Well, good afternoon. You're on Teacher Talk, killradio.org. If you need to call in, same call in numbers, 213-252-0998. This is Mark Hemphill speaking, and I'm in for Nick Richard again this week, maybe for the next couple of weeks, as Nick seems to be enjoying a very pleasant vacation on us anyway. Before getting into today's guest and what he's got to say, I wanted to do a little review here. If you remember from last week, we had Linda Everhart speak, and she represented the Save Slate. She, like David Garcia, ran for president of UTLA, and she did appraise us of the many adventures she had in doing so. We also heard from John A. Amani of Revolutionary Autonomous Communities, and he spoke to us about food distribution. In fact, I'm sure right about now, John's on his way to Santa Monica to pick up bread to be distributed to those in need. And I don't think I need to remind you that those same people that he's distributing bread to, they're also the same people that we serve. In other words, the parents and the students that we see on a daily basis. And lastly, we heard from John Adams, who is also involved in this sort of activity, community gardens. In fact, working hard to build a connection with the Jamie Oliver Food Revolution. Now, before I move on, let's look at a little of the local news. If you've been reading any of the newspapers, you know that John Deasy, the new superintendent of LAUSD, has proposed that homework be reduced to 10% as far as what it counts for toward the final grade on a student's report card. This is very interesting. There are a couple of different ways to look at that. One you could say is that since these kids don't turn in that much homework anyway, and most of the work and the comprehension takes place in the classroom, why not? Let's focus on the classroom and let it go at that. The other way to look at that would be that, look, you're punishing those people who do their homework. And the fact is that homework is a form of independent study. We're taking that out of the equation. The homework puts them on their own, where they use their own resources with help from their parents, you know, if their parents are up to that task. And we see what they can do on their own. It's kind of like almost like a pretest without the pressure. So that's something for us to consider. Another important news issue that came across was Jim Newton's interview with Warren Fletcher from the LA Times. If you read it at all, and I suggest that you go back and read it if you haven't, it was a very patronizing interview. It starts off with lauding Fletcher for his eloquence, and which should be customary, as they put it, since he has a background as an English teacher. He quotes Yeats, he quotes Buckley, he quotes The Wire. I guess he was really busy getting in a lot of quotes. I don't remember any of them being listed in an interview, but maybe the body of that will come out later. In describing himself, he, and as the article puts it, he's an unapologetic voice for the classroom. In other words, he stands for the students. That's something that we could debate. He also mentions his dedication to civility, or at least the writer does, and Fletcher more or less backs us up by referring to Deasy as his boss. That would be something that we should really consider. There's a difference between civility and taking a back step to him. In other words, kneeling in his presence. Which one are we talking about here? You know, I'm not quite sure. And he refers to Deasy as his boss. How is Deasy his boss? He's not in the classroom anymore. He's the president of UTLA. If anything, he should be looking at Deasy as an equal. If you're going to look at him as your boss, you've already conceded the power to him. I mean, you tell Deasy, and by extrapolation the district, that they wield the whip hand. Not a good tactic. In reference to Antonio Villaraigosa, the mayor, he said he held his tongue. Why? He mentioned that he was disturbed that Villaraigosa used to be a union man and definitely a defender of unions, but on the other hand, he let it go at that. Now, what the article suggests, and strongly so, is that in Fletcher, the union, it offers the union a chance to rebuild itself. Now, that's another interesting proposition. Someone needs to explain to me how we can expect a corrupt institution to reform itself. How is it going to reform itself from within? Something that you need to keep in mind as you think about this would be, look, Fletcher's in there, and with one or two exceptions, he's surrounded by the same cronies that surrounded Duffy. So what's the difference? The only exception that I can think of would be David Lyle, who's entire campaign is a mystery to us. As many claims to have participated in a long march in which no one seems to be able to verify seeing him. His rather extensive and expensive campaign, which no one understands how he was able to finance. His intimate knowledge of the union prior to going into it, which seems to be uncharacteristic of someone who's never served in the union before. Well, those are a lot of question marks, and I'm not going to go ahead and expound on that any further. But I would say this. What Fletcher seems to do is he condemns the district hierarchy, yet continues to serve it. This seems to smack of collusion with no extrapolation, which is the same thing the union's been doing now for at least the six Duffy years and far further back than that. We could probably take that back to Helen Bernstein. But again, that would be another show and a long talk. Last thing that we need to bring up. Berkeley released a research paper on the teacher dropout rate among charter schools in the Los Angeles area. Seems like it's three times more likely in a charter than it is in one of the regular schools. The most often cited reason was difficult teaching conditions. Now, here's something that didn't appear in the report, by timelines it couldn't. Within a few days, the charter reps were on the local news, you know, the main channels. And what they said was that this departure of teachers was actually a good thing. It's a weeding out of teachers who were not dedicated enough to their profession. And then in the long run, it serves education. What they did not mention is that none of these departing teachers were teachers that they had determined did not fit their description and asked them to leave. No, these were people who left of their own volition. And consequently, it's very questionable as to whether or not their dedication was sufficient enough for them to succeed in education. Not performing for the charters under the conditions in which the charters expect a teacher to perform are much different from what you would find in a public school. And lastly, no mention of the increasing student failure rate among charters. Nothing at all. Before we move on to our guest today, I'll give you a little preview. Next week we have Jenny Cook of Jenny Cooks and foodforlunch.org, another well-known advocate of better nutrition for not just the public, but for kids specifically, and another advocate of community gardens and food distribution. Next week, we look forward to hearing from her. But for today, our guest in studio is Neil Chertkoff. If you're familiar with education in this area, at least when it comes to forums and demonstrations and attending meetings, Neil has been a constant presence. In fact, he's sort of like, in many instances, the unfriendly conscience sitting on the shoulder of people who need to be motivated and the direct enemy, and not the reluctant enemy, of those who would in any way deceive us or try to pull the wool over our eyes. Neil, would you like to say a little bit about yourself?
Sure. My name is Neil Chertkoff. I'm retired from the front lines of the teaching in the Los Angeles Unified School District. I have served about 21 years in the trenches at various schools. I met many wonderful, honest, and good colleagues over the years. And this has been a period of retreats in terms of the teachers and students' interests in public education. And it's been the last 15 or 20 years have especially been a period of onslaughts and attacks by the corporate powers that be on the public education system, the communities of working class people, the students and the teachers and the other productive employees of the school district. And this is not only true in Los Angeles, but it is a pretty well-known general trend around the country. Over this time, we have seen the rise of profiteering in schools, the rise of charter schools, semi-charter schools, standardized testing, corporate models for classroom administration, and overall dumbing down of the real critical types of education that our students need, especially the working people, if they are to be productive and be able to make headway in the future. And this crisis has now, since the economic crisis of this country, has blown wide up into the open since 2007 and 2008. Now these attacks are really accelerating by the powers that be. Because at base, at the material roots of this, lies the interests of the whole profit system. And with this crisis, what is now happening more and more openly is that markets that are shrinking and capital that is looking for profitable places to invest are finding that these that their sphere of investment has shrunk. So they're looking anywhere, in any place, for comfortable means to invest their capital and draw out a sufficient rate of profit for the investors and for the owners. And to do this, this has meant that a lot of other areas of social welfare are undergoing cuts, takeaways, takeovers, and overall domination by profiteers who are just out to suck out enough profit and more to fatten their coffers at the expense of the vast majority of the working class. And this is kind of a general situation that's been going on and spreading throughout the country. Now, let me get a little more specific here, since my experience, personal experience, has mainly been in Los Angeles and with the LA Unified School District. Over time, one of the main problems is for teachers, is teachers pay dues to a so-called union, but they don't have representation because the union, the so-called union, has flopped into bed with the district. As Mark here has pointed out in his introduction, the union presidents and the officers now openly consider the district administrators and the political hacks for the Democrats and the Republicans, they consider them their bosses. And in fact, that is true and has been true for years. But now the mask is dropping and the secrets are coming out about this kind of corrupt and venal collusion, which has been very detrimental to the not only the interests of the teachers and their professionalism, but to the education of the students as a whole in the communities. You might wonder, teachers pay dues to a union. Contract teachers pay over $60 a month. Substitute teachers, about half of that. And they pay tens of million dollars to an institution that is supposed to protect their interests. But what do we have over the last 4, 5, 6, 7 years? We have had a bevy of contracts that are like sweetheart deals with the district. And that is because there is a de facto troika here. You got the corporate heads running the show from above with their think tanks. You got the politicians in Sacramento, both the Democrats and the Republicans, at their beck and call. Then you have their lieutenants in the school district, the top administrators, fattened, six-figured plus perks bureaucrats that produce nothing but trouble for your for working class students and interests. And then you have a fifth column of so-called trade union secretaries that goes along with every goes along with almost every demand of the district and the politicians. And overall, because of the crisis that exists now, the economic crisis, what has this meant? It's meant for the teachers, mainly. It has meant cutbacks in jobs. Over the last 3 years, there's been some near 3,000 classroom teachers that have been positions that have been eliminated. There's been cuts in health benefits for a significant number of UTLA dues payers. There's been an attack on professionalism in the classroom. Teachers now are their professionalism is being eliminated, and they are being treated more like military recruits in some kind of boot camp environment, and they are forced to be bossed around, told everywhere where to go, what to do, when to say it, and what not to say. And this goes along. This is the corporate model transferred to the schools, into the public schools. Now, I'm not saying that this is some nuanced feature. This has been going on for decades, of course. But now we're seeing the open acceleration of this. And these problems have created enormous frustration and confusion among teachers. Because teachers thought, when they had an organization that claims to defend them, like the United Teachers of Los Angeles, which is more or less now being known as the Unemployed Teachers of Los Angeles, UTLA, that this organization that collects their money should serve their interests. But the horrific thing about this is that you have a fifth column of union leaders from the so-called union that collects dues from its members, and in terms of tens of millions of dollars a year, and openly serves not only the district administrators, but it serves the Sacramento politicians, mainly the Democratic Party, but even some Republicans too, that they've come to more friendly with, of course. Okay, let's get back to the track record of the Sacramento politicians, the district, and the union, and their troika, their little conspiracy here against public education, carrying out the orders of corporate moguls and think tanks, and carrying out an assault on the interests of working class people and their children.
Hold on for just a second now. We have a call coming in.
Oh, hi, this is Francisco Martinez, and I was just listening to you guys over the internet.
Okay. And would you like to make some contribution or some observation?
Well, absolutely. That would be great.
Go right ahead. We're happy to hear from you.
Okay, great. And see if I can contribute by paying, you know, good attention to what you guys are saying. Okay, great. Go ahead with the issue, and then I'll go ahead and listen and try to contribute to whatever you guys are saying.
Okay.
Let's look at this, the actual track record of the union, which falsely claims to defend the interests of its 44,000 members and dues payers. Over the last 3 or 4 years, you have had the contracts and contract reopeners that have led to take back after take back, concession after concession. The rank and file, the union, the union now, and this is not the only union, this seems to be a trend in this country, unions, when they were really workers' unions, would bargain at least for more, a better life, and more better things for their dues payers. Today, unions like UTLA don't do this anymore. They bargain for less. They take less, and it's always less for their dues payers, and more for the district, more for their administration, more for the politicians, and more dumped back into the pockets of the corporations. And this is their track record, because you can see this in the jobs eliminated. Over the last 4 years, there has been no pay increase for teachers since 2007. And that means, in terms of the kind of creeping inflation that we've had, that's probably near a 15 or 20% pay cut that they'd like to hide. But this is their actual track record.
Yeah, Neil, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, actually, you also have to point out that it's not just the collusion between the district and the union. There is also a trilateral collusion between the union, the district, and the Democratic Party, who is actually sucking a lot of the dues payers' money for their own political campaigns. You got to understand that, you know, if you go back to the time, the union has contributed to a lot of different political candidates that later on have turned against the teachers. A good example of that could be Villaraigosa. Look at where he is now. Look at what he's doing. And at one point, he was an organizer for UTLA. So there has to be a connection between not only the teachers' union, the district, but also the Democratic Party and a lot of other forces that are within the political spectrum of this country.
Yes. These ties are not only ideological and political, but they're economic.
You know, and since you made that observation, can I ask you a question?
Absolutely.
All right. This is what I would say. Now, you're aware of a political action committee that is employed by UTLA. In other words, that's their political contribution collecting unit. And, of course, this money finds its way to Sacramento almost entirely to the Democratic Party. But as Neil has pointed out, and I think you would too, they're more or less hand-in-hand with the Republicans on most of these education issues as far as budgeting goes. Now, if you hear the union tell it, the only way we could be more effective is by contributing more money to PACE, which the membership has absolutely and categorically, you know, refused to do. Now, from your perspective, would you go so far as to say we need to stop contributing to these politicians until they sit down and start listening to us, or is there some other avenue that we need to approach?
Well, I think that one of the main things, of course, you already said that, we have to stop contributing money to all these politicians, because the problem is that unless you cut the flow of money, the collusion will never stop. Because remember that it's not just the money going out to the politicians. It's also what the officers and all these other people within the union are getting from these politicians. Remember that any time these officers finish their terms within the union, their goal is to move on either to the city council, to the school board, or to any other level within the Democratic Party. So it's not just about talking about the issue. I think we need to take action by stopping this political action committee from giving money to all these different politicians. We need to dismantle these PACs, this political action committee within the union, and actually refound the union to the original infrastructure that began back when it was originally formed.
Now, you know that's not by any means a simple task, because what we're looking at here is this. The union has become a slightly smaller mirror image of the district, in that you have the top-level bureaucrats, far more, of course, in the district than you would find in the union, who are collecting very significant salaries by way of this collusion, by this arrangement. And it's in their interest to, one, protect their positions and protect that, and in doing so, protect that system. So none of them are going to give an inch based on relevant arguments or their conscience. It's going to take force to do that.
Absolutely. And I think that the force comes from the bottom. I never seen anything done at the top. You know, I believe that experience and history has taught us that any change has to come from the bottom. Anything has to start with the rank and file and move up to the top. Because, see, what happened is that we legitimize these people. Anytime they have an election, we participate in them. Anytime we have we attend these meetings that they do every month or every 3 weeks, we legitimize these people. Of course, that in order for us to change the system, and if we're going to do it through the union, we have to participate. But at the same time, we continue to legitimize these people by doing so. But on the other hand, we have to understand that the only people who can actually change the reality within the union, within the district, are the members, the parents, the students. They have the power. And the minute that the teachers, the parents, the students realize that, the whole district, the whole union, the whole Democratic Party are going to shake.
Now, I have another idea on this that I'd like you to, or a perspective that I'd like you to examine. Now, I know that as we hold this discussion, that we are not the only ones who spot these iniquities. I mean, there are plenty of others, right down to classroom teachers, that have a full spectrum, but they have a good idea of what's going on. They see the wrongdoing. The problem with it is this, that most of them know that others are also seeing the wrongdoing. And in their way of thinking, it's up to those others to do something about it rather than them stepping up and doing something about it. So consequently, to them, we're the others. And nothing gets done here. Now, when I look at our student population in Los Angeles Unified, we're looking at, what, 80% plus Latino? Now, one thing I do know about Latinos is they're not afraid to get out and march. They're not afraid to be vocal. They're not afraid to spend some time in front of a structure making themselves known. To me, it's just logic to me that we need to, as much as possible, appeal to our Latino population, because the real force we have is right there. We can do all the dialogue we want, and we'll certainly get some support from other groups. But for the most part, this is the real power base for us, and we need to appeal to them.
Absolutely. I agree with you. I think that the Latino population within the district is one of the largest ones. But we also have to understand that most of these kids, even though they're political conscious and they understand what's going on, we have to understand that they come from low-income families, people that probably do not have the proper documentation to be in this country. So there is that fear. And I think that we have to appeal to them, but we also have to appeal to the people who was born and raised in this country, especially African-American and the Caucasian white community. I think we need to appeal to them too, because basically the struggle is not just going to affect one group alone, in this case Latinos. It's going to affect all of them, Asians, African-American, Caucasians, and all these other groups. So we have to appeal to them, but we have to start from the bottom. We have to start by reaching the parents, reaching the community, who at this time are totally in the dark about what's going on within LAUSD, what's going on within the teachers' union. A lot of teachers themselves don't know what's going on within their own union. There are schools, as we speak now, that don't even have a chapter chair.
Well, I agree with you, and I would say this in response to that. Now, in referring to the teachers that you just mentioned, and I would take in the Latino community into this, and even the students. Now, they may be ignorant of issues, but by no means are they stupid. If they're exposed to what's going on, they're going to react.
Absolutely. They will react, and I think that we have seen that back like about 3 or 4 years ago when we had these mass walkouts. Parents and students walked out with regard to all these different immigration laws that were being instituted by the government. So I think that, yes, we have a sleeping giant in this, when it comes to what's going on. But I think that in order for us to wake up that giant, we have to organize in groups. We have to organize the teachers, the substitute teachers, the healthcare professional, and also we have to reach them through this radio like yours, you know, that is doing a great job by putting out the word, because the media, the corporate media, will not do it. There are some stations that will attempt to do it, but they're also, you know, controlled by forces that will not allow you to go out and say what you want. But still, I think that your radio and internet radio, I think, is contributing to the changes that we need, but I think that we need more organizing. We need to reach more communities. We need to reach other people that at this point are totally in the dark about what's going on.
Can I pose another issue to you then in reference to that? You've used the expression or the metaphor of sleeping giant, which I think is very appropriate here, but I think I'm looking at the possibility that the sleeping giant is being tranquilized through co-option. And what I mean by that is that those people who lead the very agencies or the organizations or the entities that we would think would be speaking on our behalf and defending us are co-opted. They're actually cooperating with those who oppose us. I can give you an example of that. Are you familiar with Perdaily.com?
Yes.
Okay, well, you know who Lenny Eisenberg is.
Absolutely, yeah.
Well, if you've read the most recent story, a couple of weeks ago, we were at the California History, California Museum of Black History. There was a presentation there on their conversation series in which the featured speaker was Ramon Cortinas, who, in spite of his surname, is about as Latino as I am, you know, as an Irishman or something like that. But that's not really the issue. Uh-huh. The fact is that Lenny Eisenberg confronted him on his past. And that was very difficult to do because, for the most part, the audience wasn't exactly in favor of us in doing that. But later on, some of them agreed. In fact, privately came over and said they supported us and they wanted to know more. Now, as a follow-up to that, I contacted the museum and asked about obtaining a copy of the actual video,
uh-huh.
which they recorded, because there was no press coverage of that at all.
Uh-huh.
It was only that one video recording being made. And they told me, well, for the most part, if you want to see that again, you would need to make an appointment, come over and watch it. And I expressed to them, no, what I would like to do is, by my own expense, get a copy of it, because the number of people that I know would be interested in seeing it again would overwhelm you, just the amount of time and the scheduling. Mm-hmm. And at first, the response to that was very friendly. And a short time later, I get an email back telling me, well, we'll have to put in a request for you. And they asked me directly, what is the reason for your request? And I responded by repeating myself.
Uh-huh.
I would like to share this event. I did not specifically pick out the confrontation with Cortinas. The only thing I said in relation to that,
uh-huh.
I asked them a question. Is the entirety of the video on the actual disc or tape, or is it edited? And they said the only thing dropped out of the actual presentation was when they switched discs or cassettes, whatever they happened to be using.
Uh-huh.
Well, it looked like it was promising. I never heard back from them again, and I can only draw one conclusion why I never heard from them again.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, you know, let me go back to the issue about people not participating. I think that you have to understand that the our government, per se, has been using all different kinds of methods to keep our people in a kind of a sleeping kind of sense, okay?
Yeah, somnolence.
Yeah,
all that,
exactly.
Yeah.
That's back in the old days, that was designed as a part of the federal government, okay, so that the ideologues could actually use that concept that they called as fourth-generation warfare, which is designed specifically to idiotize people through the media, okay? Any time you hear the media, you will never hear the media educating our people. The contrary, they will use all different kinds of terms so that people will feel that everything is okay, even though they know that everything is going down the drain, down the hill. So one of the reasons why I believe that people are so much in the state of sleeping kind of way is because they feel that everything is okay, and that has been put in their brains. And when they put something in your brain and they repeat it every day, even if it is not true, you end up believing it. That's the essence of the fourth generation warfare, okay? And that is something that we need to educate our people about, because people need to know how they're being brainwashed every day. Why people believe, like even in the union, if you think about it, a lot of people, especially within the substitute teacher, feel that every problem that we have should be taken to court. However, it has been proven again and again that the courts will never solve the problems for anybody except the ruling class.
Hmm. I can add a couple of comments there. When you talk about this sleeping state, that's even more typical of teachers who watch these events, and even watching their colleagues being called down for incompetence or some sort of an evaluation procedure, and if that doesn't work, being accused of some impropriety. And rather than reacting to it supportively, they take that attitude of, there before the grace of God go I.
Yeah, well, you know, but it has to do with the education of this country. We have to go back how these teachers have been also educated. Remember that the system has been designed to have you accept things. They have not been educated to get involved and do something about it to change anything. So when you have these people just listening and accepting what they're being given, in this case, the value-added model is one good example of that. Okay, the reason is because these teachers have actually been educated to believe that. They have been educated to accept what the system gives them. Now, we have to re-educate these teachers. We need to go back to square one and re-educate these teachers that a democracy can only exist when you participate directly into the process.
You know, there are some issues that go beyond that, too. What I mean is, again, the stacking of the cards against us. You read Per Daily, so did you read the coverage on the Paulette Jackson case?
I did not. I did not.
She was, or is, a longtime veteran teacher who was eliminated from the classroom based upon a series of accusations of incompetence and things surrounding incompetence. After a lengthy process of hearings, the courts determined that every accusation, every allegation made against her by the district was false, that none of them held water. She was exonerated of any of them. However, the judge still held up the district's termination based on the fact that there were one or two instances where she could be, let's say, determined to have been insubordinate to the school principal where she served.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, we go back to the same thing. I think that unless there is an organization behind you, that's what they try to keep you isolated, single out. That's what they have, what they call the rubber room, because they want you to stay there 8 hours, because they know that if you're not there 8 hours or 6 hours, okay, you're going to be out there organizing, telling people what's going on with your problem. So that's what they have, the rubber room in there. The rubber room is not just designed to keep you there to watch you and all that. It's a way to keep you away from the rest of other teachers from knowing what your problem is. That's why they have so many people there waiting, because they want you isolated. They want you away from others, and that way they know that others will not know what they're doing to you.
You know, and it's also a double entendre. What I don't think most people realize about the rubber room is this, that there are certainly those who go into the rubber room and pursue their cases through appeal and whatever mechanisms or pathways there are. But there is a largely significant part of that rubber room group who emotionally and psychologically crack under those circumstances, the idleness, the never knowing what's going to happen next, the feeling of being singled out, the feeling of being detained for assumed wrongdoing or whatever the case may be. They succumb to it. They go under.
Yes, yes. Anyway, I'm gonna have to leave you guys because I'm going to a family reunion for my mother. But I wanted to say hi to you. I support you guys 100%. I know you guys are doing a great job, and I'm glad that Neil is there. I know that Neil can talk a lot more about these issues, and maybe in depth. And maybe we can have our audience to call in. You know, have them participate. Maybe the audience is not. The audience cannot be a passive audience. They have to be part of it so that this change can actually happen. Not in the community. It has to happen within the person first. It has to be in their brains. They have to fully understand what's going on so that they can translate that change over to the rest of their community.
I think we agree with that 100%, and I personally want to thank you for calling in, and I want to encourage you to call in at any time. We would be more than happy. We would welcome you to add your ideas. We're going to have a number of other featured speakers along the way here who are going to cover other issues which relate directly to what we're saying, and getting input from others who see it from a different angle, who see it differently, is critical to completely understanding this.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you very much. And one last thing is that we also have produced a DVD that maybe Neil can also talk about it, that we can hand out to the teachers, to anybody who wants to see it, so they can actually hear what's going on with teachers and retired teachers within the district.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, thanks a lot again, and I'll probably talk to you next time.
All right. Thank you again for calling in.
Sure. Thanks a lot.
There you go. And down. Okay. Neil, you're back.
Yeah, let me. That was an excellent call by Francisco. He tried to clarify some points, and I want to continue on with this and point out the kind of the material facts, the material evidence that shows what is going on, and perhaps can point to ways and methods that teachers, community activists, and organizers can use to fight back. But the main thing first we have to have is the facts and the information, because a lot of this is covered up, both by the Sacramento politicians and their political machinery, the media, of course, and then it filters down into the Los Angeles Unified School District and their collaborator, the main collaborator, the UTLA, the United Teachers of Los Angeles, or as it's becoming known, the Unemployed Teachers of Los Angeles. One of the ways they do this is by always vaporing about the fact of, about how they claim to be open, democratic, and they allow other points of view to be heard. But this is largely a myth. What goes on in practice is that basic information that teachers and others are supposed to, parents are supposed to be able to have their hands on about the financing, about the patronage, about the running and the academic planning in the district is kept under wraps and is basically carried on from above and against the interests of the common working people of this city. What happens here is that within the union, you have actually union staffers and low-level staffers and wannabes that are not only get a salary and per diem money the union, they actually get the paycheck from the state Democratic
Would you like to add
party.
Something to what Neil's saying?
Yeah.
Okay, hold on for just a moment. Neil, we have John Adams on the line.
Okay.
Yeah, so let me put him back up here.
Okay, we're going to have a caller in here.
All right, John, could you go ahead and speak?
Yeah, Neil and Francisco and you are certainly covering the macro issues, and, you know, obviously that's important. I just wanted to add something I said last week and then add a little bit more, but it's regarding the micro issues at UTLA, and maybe Neil knows some of these people that work for UTLA, but last week I talked about Paula Parr, who was representing supposedly Lenny, and she just double-backed on a position that was supposed to go to him, and they ended up using somebody who was not even credentialed. And she said, you know, there's no way the union's going to put up with that, and then she did a backflip. And then with me, she had said, she had told me that I had an attorney when the district came after me for unpaid money, and I said, no, I don't have an attorney. And I said, well, where's the email saying that? And she wouldn't produce it. And we had lots of problems with her at Garfield High School. She really was siding with the district on just about everything against a really terrible principal we had there. And then even more recently, this December, again, with the payroll issue, I know for a fact that Carl Joseph backdated an overpayment data form to show that they were doing something when I filed a PERB charge. So I gave them a directive to produce the you know, his timestamp on his computer, because he has a letter here, and they refused to hand it over. And because PERB didn't side with me on this, you know, it's now an appeal, but if I ever win the appeal, which I doubt, but if I do, I could then, I suppose, subpoena records and get it for him. But they refused to turn it over. So we have my own union falsifying documents, and Carl Joseph is one of them. And then going back even farther, in 2007, Bruce Williams, our East Area Representative, my employment was blocked out of retaliation for the principal, Sandoval, at Boyle Heights, was not implementing California Law 49079, which is a criminal misdemeanor, because he has to tell a teacher why students are in his classroom. And if they've been suspended, it's after Columbine. You know, you have to know if the kid's violent, what he did at the other school. You have to know those reasons, you know, how to handle that kid. And the principal wasn't doing that. He was cheating on his time card. He was always gone. So anyway, so the principal then tried to retaliate by giving me, you know, one of those disciplinary meetings or accusations. I forget what the term is. But anyway, So I had Bruce Williams, my own East LA rep, actually helping them with that, while at the same time he was allowing them to block my work for 14 months, and the union wouldn't pay for an attorney. Thank God I resolved it through PERB. PERB was helpful against the union. But anyway, I just want to hear, Neil, and your thoughts on some of these people working for the union. And then, of course, the last person I want to mention is, I'm forgetting his name now, but he was our union rep, and he told me that there's more schools where we're having problems at Garfield, and even though Garfield was one of the biggest contributors to UTLA at that time, I'll think of his name later, but anyway, that's my little diatribe here.
Well, you know, John, what I'd add to that is this, that we know that Carl Joseph, for instance, like $140,000 a year.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. 44. Yeah. Oh, it's 144. I'm wrong. I need to be corrected. He's the most well-paid officer in UTLA. He makes more than Warren Fletcher does.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, and I am not hesitant to say that I have never met anyone who was even vaguely in the realm of being happy with his services. Not at all. And let's take this up a step higher. Let's say you need to go on and with the union's assistance and defend yourself through appeal or through whatever roadway is available to you. Of course, they're going to refer you to Trigstad, Schwab, and Trigstad are guaranteed their money. They're going to make anywhere from $3,000 to $25,000 the union money off of you. Their main concern, and they'll let you know right up front to your face, is that, you know what, you're guilty, and we have to come up with a settlement for you. That settlement is nothing more than the equivalent of copying a plea. You will do badly on that settlement. It is a guarantee. But Trigstad, Schwab, and Trigstad will still walk away with their pockets full. And yet, they'll claim that there is no conflict of interest between what they do, the union, and the district. I mean, this is patently absurd. So you're destined to lose on this from the beginning, the way it's currently structured. And if you have the audacity to suggest that the union funds that are allocated to you for a defense should be spent by an attorney of your choosing to more adequately defend you, the answer will, of course, be no.
But I'm even talking just on the grievance level and just basic day-to-day type stuff you would need your union for. You can't count on them because the union's full of a bunch of Benedict Arnolds that have no business working for the union. I mean, Bruce Williams, I have the email if anybody wants to see it, but he said, well, we have summer vacations when we didn't want to pursue a grievance against this principal because this California Code 49079 matches a union grievance exactly. So you file both, and I did both. And he says, well, we have summer vacations when the union has no summer vacations, but he was just trying to delay it and do anything he can not to move forward on it. So, I mean, you really have people working for the district. They are for, and you're paying them to work for the district against you.
You're absolutely right. It's as if they're operating under an edict of not being overly aggressive.
Well, it's even worse than that, but yeah, exactly. They you know, don't want to upset the district. They want to keep the whole corruption ball rolling and not upset the status quo. That way their jobs, you know, may be in danger. I don't know what the exact motivation is, but they work for the district, basically.
Well, all of these people, whether they're directly on the union payroll already or not, they're looking for their upward mobility into it, and as the previous caller stated, they're all thinking of the next step up. They're never satisfied with what they're doing here. It's nothing but a way station to another rung on the ladder.
Right, but then you have like Paula Parr, who's, you know, not even helping you, you know, settle money so it doesn't go to court. That, you know, if there's a fee dispute, a payroll dispute, which I had, the district saying, you know, they owe me money, and then I'm saying, well, you owe me this. And so the union is there to pay to resolve it, and she's claiming I have an attorney representing me when I didn't. And then I had to go out and get an attorney and spend $7,000 because the union wouldn't represent me. So it's just unbelievable. But I'll let you guys go because I want to hear what Neil has to say. He hasn't really had that much time to talk.
Well, you know, before letting you off, John, I want to say this. This is a regular occurrence, that what I'm about to say. People go into court with this union-appointed law firm defending them.
Mm-hmm.
An issue will come up or a motion, and they'll make it very clear to their representing attorney, no, do not do that.
Mm-hmm.
The attorney will go ahead and do whatever they want.
Right.
And, you know, once it's said, unless you're going to stand up in court and say, I'm dismissing him on the spot, you're stuck with it. You know,
right, right.
You know, again, the whole thing is set up to work against you and in favor of your opposition.
Right.
But thank you very much for calling in, John, and you're always welcome to do so. You know that.
Okay, very good. Thanks, right. Mark. Thanks, Neil. Bye.
Neil, we're turning it back over to you.
Yeah, let me just respond partly to John and continue on here with this expose. It's important to realize that why does this situation exist?
This thing's just doing what it wants.
You have these are institutional entities. You have the Sacramento politicians on top. You have the LA Unified School District, which has nearly 500 bureaucrats off-site bureaucrats that produce paperwork and produce margarita lunches. They're making well over $100,000 a year, probably near $150,000 with their perks. And you have the union leaders, many of whom in the top two dozen make almost as much as that. Now, what do you have here? But this collusion, and it ends up being a cesspool of corruption. And this is not something that's an accident. It's not because these people are stupid or because they don't know what they're doing. They know what they're doing. They plan what they're doing. And they have their interests, their crass material interests. And that's the main thing that they're going to defend. And what that means is that the students, the parents in our communities, and the teachers are going to pay the price for this, pure and simple. There is no going to them and getting down on all fours and begging them to be nice. Because, of course, they're going to send their flim-flam men and their admin from the district and the union to tell you that this is what democracy looks like and all this other falderal and hullabaloo. But behind the scenes, this is their flim-flam game. And the realities remain the same, and they get worse. another thing is that people who are in the union, if the activists, when they do research and start to find out what's going on, the union officers and the district, they don't treat them as allies or partners or friends. They treat the whistleblowers as the worst enemies. If you dig up their salaries, their perks, their credit cards, and their malfeasance, they will attack you. The ones that dig up the information are the ones they come down on. And this has happened time and time again with whistleblowers in this district. And not only does the district have a conscious policy of hunting these people down, the union, the fifth column leadership of the union, whether it be under before John Perez or A.J. Duffy's regime or now Warren Fletcher's regime, is going to be their friend and their little helper in persecuting their own newspapers. Also, information comes out now, since this crisis began, and the Sacramento politicians are now instituting open attacks on social programs, health, education, welfare, of the working people more and more, this has not changed the district and the union one whit. The union still turns over tens of millions of dollars every year to the Democratic Party. And this is after the Democratic Party openly flops into bed with the Republican Party and engineers some of the most vicious cuts in jobs, attacks on health benefits, attacks on welfare, attacks on housing, attacks on the environment of the working people. The UTLA PACE Committee, that's the Political Action Committee for so-called education, will still fork over tens of millions of dollars. And the truth, what you can see here is they're going to say, well, they're friends of teachers. These people are the friends of teachers. No, they're the friends of the politicians, and the politicians are the friends of the corporations. And they have their nice little game going on here. And we, the working people, are paying for this game. And we're paying a dear price for this. And this has to stop. Recently, the organization, the resistor organization of rank-and-file teachers in UTLA, a group called SAVE, a Social Alternative Voice for Education, has produced a new DVD. It's quite an expose pointing out much of this collusion, much of how life in the inner cities is deteriorating, much of how the educational standards for our youth are being driven down so that corporate patronage jobs can be upheld and that favoritism can be upheld for the elites and their stooges and hangers-on. This video is about 50 minutes long, and you can get a copy by emailing to fmartin6@yahoo.com. That's F-M-A-R-T-I-N, the number 6, the at symbol, yahoo.com. And just send your snail mail address, your home address, and we will send you one free copy of this video. If you want extra copies of this to get around to your colleagues, the extra copies are $3 each to cover our expenses. And this video should be shown and discussed and debated and carried forward in the active organizing of teachers, other school site workers, community activists, and we can see if we can form a basis of unity and alliance, but not an alliance just to talk, an alliance for struggle, an alliance for action, to try to turn the tide against this avalanche of attacks on public education, the schools, and the and the corporate domination of life, not only in this country, but throughout the world. I want to get back to the the activists within the union also know, of course, they're not going to tell you this, but sometimes it slips out, some of the officers and their wannabes in the union, inside the union, get special per diem allowances for performing tasks, i.e. duties, not just for the union, but for the district and the Democratic Party in terms of electoral work. During the last election, the election of another assembly and a legislature dominated by the Democratic Party, that no sooner were the election results counted and the results posted and these people took office, that these Democrats flopped into bed with the Republicans and engineered under Jerry Brown, Democrat, huge budget cuts, huge attacks on more attacks on welfare programs, education and welfare, and more giveaways to the corporations and the rich. And this is in line with other governments, whether they be run around the country, other state governments and legislatures, whether they be run in Wisconsin, they're run by the Republican Party, and the Democrats are their junior partners. In California, it's the Democratic Party running the show, and the Republicans are their junior partners. But together they make a team, Tweedledee and Tweedledum. And they're against, and what they do in practice is they carry out what needs to be done to prop the system itself up. These attacks on education are not an accident. They are seen as the necessities by powerful, ruling class forces that control much of the financial sphere, the major financial spheres of activity in this country and around the world. And they are dictating. They want things done the way they're being done, their way. And their slogan is, they have their stooges in the union tell you, this is how democracy works looks like. But their real slogan is, behind the scenes, is our way or the highway. And that's how it works out in practice. And as activists go around, they can go around and find out in the union that people are not only getting paid by the union, they're getting per diem from the union, But they get the nice little paychecks every month from the Democratic Party, too, to aid them and assist them in betraying their own colleagues. And we want to make these points public. And by getting our video, the same video that I advertised, that's F. Martin, that you can get it from fmartin6@yahoo.com, fmartin6@yahoo.com, we will send you a free copy. And please watch this video and show it to your colleagues and discuss it, comment on it, criticize it, but get it around and get people reading this, listening to this video, and you'll really get an insight on what is going on here.
You might want to mention that Francisco Martinez already has portions of this video up on the web.
Yes.
So you're able to actually view excerpts from it, and they're very salient. So it's worth your time to spend 5 minutes listening to an excerpt.
So the present situation, what do we have now, bringing this kind of up to date? Now, we just had, within the LAUSD, we had another contract reopener. And with the UTLA and the LAUSD, when there is a yearly contract reopener, that is just code for more concessions and attacks on teachers' standards and the standards of your students' education, for more giveaways by the union leaders and their friends to their political brothers and sisters who are running the show in Sacramento. What is going on now is that you had on radio and the corporate media, you had weeks of propaganda about the new contract agreement, which said that there would be no layoffs, no RIFs. RIFs are reduction in force. That means laid off teachers. And they were telling you that either zero or hardly any teachers would be laid off. But when you did the real math, you realized that of the teachers that were given layoff notices, about two-thirds of them that got these threatening layoff notices were rehired back. But there's a full one-third, over 1,000 and probably close to 1,500, that have not been hired back. They are effectively terminated as of July 1st, but the district and the union, because they don't want to tell you the truth and deal squarely with these teachers, are telling them that they're lobbying in Sacramento and they're going to get money to get your jobs back. This is baloney. They know it's baloney. They know these teachers have been betrayed, backstabbed, and thrown under the bus. And they want to allow the summer to come in when most schools are out of session, so teachers don't meet, and then they can allow these RIFs, these layoffs, to go through. And the only thing the union and the district mainly are signing up these RIF teachers that lost their regular classroom positions to come in September and become substitutes, thus decimating the jobs of many hundreds of substitute teachers' jobs, and hence the health benefits of the substitutes who have to work a certain number of days to qualify for yearly benefits. And the district and the union leaders know all of this. They may play stupid, they may act as if they didn't know what was happening, but under the table they've shaken hands, and probably more, and they know what's going on. And this signals us that the time of inaction is over. If teachers really want to fight for their professions, fight for their futures and interests, fight for their students, they have to rally their own forces. Because you can't, as the caller before, Francisco, was pointing out, you can't rely on the courts. You certainly wouldn't rely on the politicians that are going to tell you one thing and do the exact opposite. And you have to rely on your own forces. That's the reason teachers have benefits. Historically, is because teachers throughout decades past organized actions and organization in their own interest to fight for benefits and professionalism and a higher degree of academic standards in the schools. But what is what is happening now is in this economic crisis, the powers that be are deciding that much of this has to be cut back. They don't want to afford this. They don't want to spend money for it. They have other things to spend money for, things like war. They've got four or five wars going on around the world right now, openly, and probably more brushfire wars behind the scenes, that the Pentagon, the arms manufacturers, are taking not only billions or hundreds of billions, but even trillions of dollars. You have a situation where the government, from the local, state, and of course federal level, that is all gung-ho to bail out the financial institutions, the banks, mortgage companies, insurance companies, and other robbers and parasites so that they can restore their profit margins. But what does that leave for the working people? It leaves the social programs gutted. It leads it leads to a situation where the environment is being raped and torn apart. And it leads to a situation where your students' education levels are being driven downhill. And the powers that be don't care. It's like, I'm not trying to sound like George Carlin here, but he has excellent videos on, especially his video on YouTube about education, which he goes into these things too. But even though he does it in a kind of comedic way, this is no joke. And what he points out is that the corporations and their politicians are going to get your benefits, whether those benefits are education, health care, Social Security, your job pensions. These corporations and their stooges, the administrators in the school districts, and the union chiefs that are in their hip pocket are going to attack you. And they're going to demand that you take less so they can get more.
Hi, I just have a question, though. Because I agree with everything you're saying, but at the same time, the state is broke. It's bankrupt. Okay? So this isn't about, you know, the state is not cutting back on education because we're giving money to the wars. It's because they're bankrupt and they're trying to figure out how to deal with what we got.
Well, okay, they're claiming that they are bankrupt. But if you'll notice, if you read the business press, the TV, corporate media, their budget figures are totally inaccurate. They don't even tell you that 25% of the budget, this is the state budget, not the federal budget, is used every year, more than 25%, to pay off bond interest and principal to corporations.
Good point.
And, of course, they're not going to give the working people these figures, because then the working people are going to tie in the policies of the Democratic and Republican Party to the parasitic interests of these bond companies on Wall Street and other places, and the fact that the politicians are their servants, not yours.
Okay.
So when they say that the coffers are empty and broke, that's because of their priorities. They're corrupt and parasitic priorities of the Democratic and Republican parties. To them, right away, off the top of general funds in the state, when general funds are received, the first thing they do with general funds is deduct the amounts that they're going to pay right off the bat with no cuts, with no takeaways, to the bondholders on Wall Street and in other financial houses. And not only the principal, but the interest must be paid on time, because that is what your politicians, Democrat and Republican, are sworn to defend, okay. Not your interest.
Okay, Neil, very good to say the least, but I'd like to add a couple things to that. One, that we're not just looking at the RIFs. If you look at the ADA clauses of the tentative agreement, it's based around the amount of ADA which is generated. The way it looks now, according to that, we're going to see a lot more furlough days. Those are a de facto reduction in salary. That's, you know, up to what, 15%? according to how many days they get. Another thing that we don't mention, which we should, is that it's not just the certificated personnel that are losing their positions. There's a wave of classified positions, secretarial, janitorial, maintenance, who are all losing their positions. Their union sold them out a long time ago with Me Too agreements for over 10 years ago, that whatever the teachers got in the way of a raise, they got to. In fact, the administrators at LA Unified benefit from that same Me Too agreement. So based on their enormous salaries, they're picking up another huge chunk of money based on whatever teachers got. So, I mean, that's something to be considered. All of these certificated people have been sold out. They're losing their jobs, and they have no recourse, which means even less recourse than teachers have, which isn't much recourse. And finally here, this chance of the union reforming itself, that's based upon the successful election of Warren Fletcher. Well, let's start from the beginning. Warren Fletcher came into office based on cheating. No, he did not cheat personally himself. But Leonard Segal and another quasi-substitute teachers ran false candidacies in which they promoted his candidacies. These were violations against election code from the very beginning. Warren Fletcher is on the election code committee. He was on the last election code committee, yet he said nothing to it. In fact, when he was approached by it by Linda Everhart, one of his opponents for that same office, if anything, he brushed her off. He refused to comment on that or take any action on it. He wouldn't even disown that act of cheating. So, I mean, we're saddled with this sort of leadership, and we're expecting it to change. We're expecting them to make a difference. We're expecting them to reform the union. That sounds ridiculous. The man profited off of someone who cheated for him, on his behalf, who is already collecting a check from the Democratic Party, who is already collecting a check from the union, who is already supposedly working as a substitute. Oh, yeah, now that's something we can put a lot of faith in.
Good points, yes. let's go on here with the way the system itself is profiting from all these cuts. One of the things that happens when the crisis hit is the huge amount of unemployment, not just for teachers, but other workers throughout the country and wider. What happens when you have the market system in dominance and you have the labor market flooded with laid-off people is this does the corporations and the bosses, whether they be private bosses, corporate bosses, or state corporate bosses, is they're able to drive the salaries and the benefits of the workers down. Unless the workers are organized to fight back and maintain their own interests. And once that ability to fight back is paralyzed and you don't have struggle, well then the market has a total chokehold on where almost a total chokehold on where your wages and benefits are going to be going. And you can see that throughout the country. What's going to happen, of course, not just in L.A., we don't want to pit one city against another or one American state against another and get into that that trap. But what happens is that unemployed people are going to try to move around and find jobs where they can find them. And if you're a teacher that got fired in Illinois or a teacher that got fired in Washington or got fired in Alabama, you come out to California and you're looking for a job. And you're going to go to those institutions where you think you have qualifications. And that's also true in reverse. California teachers that are laid off. One thing the union and the district have helped do, if they want to talk about the help that they've given teachers, is the help they've given them, so-called help they've given teachers, is help finding out where U-Haul renters are. Because there's been so many layoffs, that's one business that is probably on the upswing, is the U-Haul companies throughout the country with all the teachers that are forced to pack up. They lose their homes, and they end up having to move in back in with their relatives, or they have to go to another state to find a position. Because of the conscious policies of a system and a venal bureaucracy of that looks after its corporate and profit interests first, its own selfish interest, and in the case of the union collects dues from the people that it has victimized, and it has betrayed them and stabbed them in the back. And it continues to this day. And this situation is rising. And that's what needs to be changed. And one way, there are ways to change that. The struggle is not an impossible one, but it does take time and work. It takes time and work for colleagues to study, to meet with other colleagues and friends, to organize meetings, to organize demonstrations, to organize other forms of resistance, and when they go back into their workplace, to extend this to their work sites and build and demand that the attacks on their livelihoods be stopped, demand that the quality of education for working people not be stripped down and not be torn to pieces even more. And without the self-activity of the students, the teachers, the classified workers, the janitors, the clerks, the bus drivers, all of them, in tandem with the community, without this struggle, the attacks are going to get worse. But if people can organize themselves and work with others and mobilize the fight back, we do have a chance to force the the powers that be to back off. But this is going to take a lot of work. But it's developing. The consciousness is developing slowly. But still, there's such a lot of work to do. We're only at the beginning of this fight. And I would like to say, hopefully, that we have just begun to fight.
All right. Thank you, Neil. I don't see any callers coming in, so it looks like we're drawing to a conclusion for today's show. I would like to thank Neil for coming in and remind you that next week our speaker will be Jenny Cook from Neil's got something else to say. Go right ahead, Neil.
Yeah, in terms of the things, your teachers are going to know teachers will know if they look in and see what, if they look at what politicians say, district bureaucrats and union misleaders are telling them. By looking at what they, not so much what they say, by what they do. And in the case of the union, some of the union apologists are going around telling people, well, yeah, this is all true, that we're having our livelihoods stripped to pieces and torn down, but this new leadership under Warren Fletcher is going to promote a resistance and is even talking about plans for a strike in the spring. And this is utter balderdash. I wish it was true, but it's not true. And the reason I was in the last union major strike in 1989, and you know if there's going to be a strike coming because there's always strike preparation.
Yeah, from a union that couldn't organize and successfully execute a one-day walkout.
Yeah, 2 years ago. They couldn't even have the cojones to have a one-day workout 2 years ago, supposedly to save 2,100 teachers from being fired.
And the last demonstration they managed to secure, they also secured the district's permission to do it.
Yeah, they had to have a demonstration down, a legal demonstration in Pershing Square downtown, not even near the around the union headquarters. They had to get the district's permission, and probably the permission of the Democratic and Republican Party, too, to hold the demonstration.
All right, Neil, thank you. Okay.
One more thing.
Sure thing.
I wanted to point out that in terms of tactics, people are going to say, this is a lot of information, and it's very some of it is very useful, but then what are we going to do? And the thing is that is the key. That is the kicker. And the point is that there are things that workers can do. They can organize their own meetings in their communities, among their neighbors, disseminate information, hold pickets and demonstrations, and take this into their work sites and raise the question of workers defending their own interests eventually through job actions. Job actions building up to a possible general strike. Not just a controlled trade union, milquetoast legal strike with police permission, but a general strike of the workers that carries out mass action against the interests of the employers and forces the employers to back off their attacks on the workers.
All right. Thank you again, Neil. Next week, Jenny Cook from foodforlunch.org. Thank you for listening, and we'll be saying so long for now from Teacher Talk on KILL Radio.